Hey, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow in July. Now, we are now in the month that teams will report to their facilities for training camp, getting closer and closer to the start of the season. But you should know there are a lot of NFL players that are training as we speak. In fact, this is the time of year when people with private coaches get their work in with them, which means that my guest today has been incredibly busy lately. So much so that we actually had to change the time of this podcast taping twice. You know, when Josh Allen needs face-to-face time with his coach, you just got to take a back seat to that, and I'm fine with that. Especially because Jordan Palmer, who I'm so excited to talk to today, let me tag along a couple of weeks ago as he trained a different big-name quarterback, Desmond Ridder, who the Falcons picked up in the third round of the draft and who could not have been nicer about having a fly on the wall for his entire session, which was fascinating for me, the session, for a bunch of different reasons. One, I have been to a million practices in my time, but I cannot remember the last time I was at an NFL workout or practice without a specific story to work on. So for me, the freedom to just follow along and listen without any kind of specific thing that I'm looking for was incredibly freeing in the sense that I could just see what it was that jumped out at me the most. And in this case, it was the intense attention to detail. So I showed up for the start time. Jordan told me to be there at 8 a.m. I was there a few minutes early. Palmer suggested a place nearby for coffee. Tim's Organic Coffee, cannot recommend it enough if you're in South Orange County. If you have to go out of your way to get it, I would say that's not a bad idea. It was very good, and I myself am kind of a coffee snob. Then I made my way to their office slash classroom, which is in the kind of complex where you would likely find like a doctor's office or have a meeting with your accountant, or maybe find an investment firm like the one that Palmer shares his office space with, RX3. It's a firm co-founded by Aaron Rodgers. And one of the partners in that firm was there working that day in an office off to the side of the main space, which has framed jerseys along the back of the wall, an enclosed meeting room with a boardroom-like table, lots of memorabilia on the wall. There's a bar with some drinks for after work and also Gatorade and stuff like that for during work. And the highlight of the space, which is a huge simulator screen with like turf in front and a couch facing the screen. And this is where they watch tape with background music on the whole time that Palmer controls. He is the DJ. Ridder jokingly called his playlist that day a Hollister playlist, suggested they spray the spot with cologne to complete the vibe. For the record, Palmer called it Buddha Bar Radio, if you want to check it out. Anyway, first thing they did was sit down to watch tape of what they had done the day before. And when I say that, I mean a specific thing that they had done the day before that resulted in them watching and then rewatching the same 5 7-second clips of Ridder dropping back while they looked at where and when his foot was planting. Did that for 40 minutes. During which time, Jordan's partner, Mike White, arrived to weigh in on the things that he saw. And he kind of started demonstrating on the turf in front of us some of the things. This is not the Mike White that plays for the Jets, obviously. It's a different Mike White who played quarterback for Missouri State and has gravitated more recently toward the biomechanics of quarterbacking. It's a newfound expertise that he has that is changing the way that Palmer is coaching quarterbacks and definitely altering my ability to understand what they're talking about. I feel like I need to take a kinesiology class or two or three to keep up with some of the things that they're telling me that they're doing. A lot of it, to be honest, is going right over my head. And I admitted that at one point to Mike, and he said, perhaps to be kind, perhaps honestly, that that happened a lot and that it was very important in their program that their quarterbacks spoke up when that was the case for them, that they advocated for their own understanding and asked questions when necessary because the coaching wouldn't work if they didn't really understand the why behind their suggestions. So after an hour and a half of tape, we all hop in our cars and we head to a nearby field where TJ Houshmandzadeh and a few other players are waiting along with a 12-year-old quarterback who comes out every once in a while to train with the guys. He, by the way, the 12-year-old, happens to be the son of a guy that I used to work with back in the day at Fox Sports West, one of my faves. And he blends in well with the older players, kind of quiet, watching it all, hopping in for reps here and there when there are windows of downtime, popping on a resistance band and doing drop backs and working on what I assume is balance, but could probably be described in a far more technical way. And that is sort of a theme of my experience there that day. Technical body movement descriptions that are in line with Palmer's biomechanics push. At one point, he comes over to me and says of a drill that they're doing, we're creating a fulcrum with the hip. A different one, we're training early trunk extension. Both of those things followed by explanations that I more clearly understood, which described the why, like what both of those things would mean for the inevitable flight of the football. But again, my point, I suppose, is that the training focused on small things that they repeated again and again with an eye on the small thing that they were focused on. It was very purposeful. And to hear Jordan and Mike describe it, very, very different from the norm. And so that's what I want to talk to Jordan about today, about what is the norm and when he decided that the norm was not what he wanted to pursue anymore. So this will not be a list of the clients that Jordan Palmer trains and his expectations for them in their current cities in the upcoming NFL season, though in a few cases that does come up organically. This is me, and hopefully you, trying to understand where we are with quarterback development and where we still have to go. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Ready.
Jordan, first of all, thank you so much for making time. I know it's been cray for you these last few weeks. What is this? Just to, you know, give the listener a general understanding of what this time of year is like for you. What's your week, your last week look like?
Well, I think this time of the year, I mean, the off season is my season, kind of as a whole. You know, the off season means different things for different level players. So for a quarterback who's finishing college, getting ready for the NFL, there is no off season. January is massively important. February is massively important. For a guy who is playing in the NFL and doesn't make the playoffs, January is Cabo time. You know what I mean? So go see family, stuff like that. So this time of year, June and July, depending on when OTAs finish. So I had kind of in June, I had heavy college players who were done with spring ball before summer ball, like just the workouts and stuff start. NFL wise, if it's so weird having, because I'm used to basically two seasons of like no OTAs because of COVID, it was like when all my guys left in April, it was just like, wait, where were you, where's everybody going? Because I was used to 2 years, I've been here for like 7 months. But yeah, it's been heavy college guys early June. And then these last couple weeks is a lot of NFL quarterbacks and NFL pass catchers, mostly wide receivers.
How many NFL quarterbacks do you work with regularly?
It varies year to year. For example, this year I did not like reach out or engage with anybody new. I've got some, I kind of looked inward for the last 2 years. So continued education, better understanding and learning about the human body, and building some systems and some programs in place for things that I'm going to do in the future. So I'm kind of building a couple projects. So I just kind of chose to invest my time more into me personally developing and learning and growing more and building some programs. And so I didn't really like reach out to anybody new. But 2 years ago I had doubled the amount of guys I work with. You know what I mean? It's just a different initiative each year. So I'd say 12 to 15 NFL quarterbacks and probably around 20 wide receivers this off season, but on a year when I, it was pretty limited on how many guys I worked with.
And do you rotate them through on a week to week basis? Like a couple of guys will come out for a week and then a couple more guys will come out for another week. Like what's the focus on the individual look like in terms of time investment for each person?
Yeah, it's almost like one of two categories now. It's dudes who live here, right? So that's really like three core guys. So Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Kyle Allen all live within a mile from me in the off season. So they've made this home. Sam Darnold's from here, but they've made this home. In years past, I didn't have any this year, but guys will come out for the entire off season, right? They'll essentially live here. They'll do an Airbnb for 3 months or whatever. And so I would say it's usually like 5 to 7 guys are doing that. And then the second one would be guys who come in for a week or come for 2 weeks, or I don't have like a 3-day program or a 5-day program. It's pretty specific to you know, these guys are NFL guys. I want to fit into their schedule. You know, Desmond Ritter's out here. Well, yeah, you bring your family with you, you know, and I'm dialing in, you know, to go to the zoo because, you know, the baby's not going to appreciate Disneyland. The zoo's easier. So here's where you guys ought to eat. And like, this is a really good quaint beach in Dana Point or Laguna Beach, whatever. So for some guys who come in for a week, they come in with their wide receiver or they come in with their family or both, or they come in for 3 days to just grind. So it's just either like guys who live here or people who are coming out for a specific period of time. And then we build a program around that.
When you say that you spent some time looking inward and focusing on yourself, I know that that was in some way like, you know, business opportunities and building out some stuff like that. How much of that has to do with the types of things that you're coaching too? Because I know that your partnership with Mike White lately has gone in a more biomechanical direction. Would you say that that's fair to say in the last few years that that's become more on your radar, things like that?
Yeah, I just, it's not an indictment on any one person. It's an indictment on the industry as a whole industry from NFL quarterback coaches, college quarterback coaches, gurus, high school quarterback coaches across the board. And I would myself, I think I'm transitioning out of being in that category. I don't even know that I'm completely removed from the category yet of everybody in there can understand, explain what they want the quarterback to do. Now that might be their personal opinion and it might be dead wrong, right? Or it might be their personal opinion and make a lot of sense. But I can count on one hand how many people can explain how and why. And when I say how, I don't mean like put your left foot here and your right foot there. I mean, I can explain what body parts are moving and how that chain is affected. And it's not just naming the body part. It's just it can explain how and why we want that to be done. And then I go spend time with some of the top golf coaches, swing coaches on the PGA Tour. By the way, like the best swing coaes on tour, they're charging $1 million a guy a year. It's just a different world. And then in baseball, it's the same thing. I mean, like every pitching coach can explain all of those things. And then you go talk to the quarterback coach from the fill in the blank with anything you want, Lindsay.
Right.
And you go,
you're talking about like any level, like high school, college, NFL, all of the quarterback coaches,
college and pro. Yeah. I mean, you just get guys who go, you know what I mean? They can recruit and they can articulate what they believe, but there's just not the how and the why that's connected, but because it's not their fault. It's because you can be a quarterback coach in the league and maybe become a coordinator, maybe become a head coach off not needing to know the body. You know what I'm saying? Like I've had great conversations and this will be out and all that stuff, but like a guy like Kellen Moore, you say what you want, like looking backwards, like it's first winningest quarterback in college football history, and it'll probably never be touched again, right? Like 50 years from now, he's probably gonna be number one. A guy who went right from playing in the NFL to being a quarterback coach, to quickly being a coordinator, to quickly getting interviews, he's gonna be a head coach next year or the following year forever,
right?
And was able to do all of those things. And he'd tell you, I'm not a expert on the human body. He was able to dominate college football in a way that will never happen again from a winning percentage standpoint, fly through the coaching ranks at a pace and trajectory that I don't know, maybe no one else has. I don't do the math. Kevin O'Connell, Sean McVay, whatever. And he's just going to fly right through this I'm not putting words in his mouth, would probably say like, yeah, the reason that's happening is not my understanding of the body. It's football and calling plays and being a great communicator and being really intelligent and understanding the game. So you can have a really awesome career without ever being able to really understand the human body, but you can't in baseball.
Right.
You can't do that in golf. Relationships.
Why is that? I think that's shocking.
To work with Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
You're not getting that job.
Why is it that you think football is so behind in that area?
I don't know.
Just because people have been getting away with it? I don't.
Yeah. I mean, people aren't hiring against it. Right. So I have a couple college clients where the school is my client. I work with the quarterback coach, the strength coach and the physical therapist, and we're on Zoom together. Mm. And so I'm implementing a program. Some cases I don't talk to the quarterback that much. With these clients, right? But in the beginning, when I was pitching this new concept, as I'm talking to the head coach, because this has to come from the head coach down, right? You got to have buy-in from the quarterback coach and the coordinator. Not just, I don't want it to be because their boss said to do it. So I got to get them to understand kind of where we're coming from in a really respectful way. But when I like would talk to the head coach, and I, you know, don't share who the clients are, but what I'd say is like, so pull up your quarterback coach's resume and show me the paragraph on biomechanics or kinesiology degree background, right? Like show that. And that's not in there, but show me the job description where you asked about that. That's not in there either. So it's not even his fault. And I'm not, it's your fault, but I'm not saying it's your fault because no one else has that either. And so it's just an industry thing. And football people are so football, right? Like it's really rare that, like I'm friends with two people that like most people in football don't know. Chris Brickley, right? He does what I do in the NBA. Right? Go on his Instagram. He's got 1.2 million followers and he's a private basketball coach. He's got Melo in there all the time. LeBron was in there last week. He's got big partnerships. He's in NBA 2K in the basketball game. Like he's really present in that space, but he does what I do in basketball. I'm the global ambassador for Wilson football. He's the global ambassador for Wilson basketball. And so like and then the same thing, I could find somebody in baseball and say the same thing. Like I interface with basketball. I interface with golf a lot. I do a lot with Titleist. I interface with the guys that do what I do in baseball. But if you're the offensive coordinator for the Washington Commanders, like there's just a chance you don't know any, you have no idea what they do in golf.
Yeah.
You have no idea. You might watch the Masters, but you have no idea what the golf industry is doing because they have so many responsibilities. I don't recruit. I don't have a room full of quarterbacks that I'm responsible for 12 months out of the year. I'm not installing. I'm not breaking down coverage. Like, cause I'm not a coach on a team. I can allocate bandwidth towards things outside of the sport of football in a way that the Carolina Panthers quarterback coach can't do. He's got a 12 months, 365, 100-hour work weeks for Panthers football.
Right.
So it's not an indictment on anybody. It's just an assessment of the industry. And I just say, like, I have a unique perspective, unique ability to have this opinion because when I do draft training, I work with every college's finished product. And then one way or another, I interface with all 32 teams. I just had the Elite 11 the other day. So there's 20 kids from 11 states. This is my 24th year doing it. You know what I mean? Like I ran 12 camps this year. 340 kids come to my camps from five countries, 41 states, including Alaska and Hawaii. So it's just like, I'm not right or wrong. It's just my assessment of the entire industry in a way that like, it's a unique perspective over that.
You were working with quarterbacks before this really occurred to you, right? Like you were doing drills, you were training people, and then you kind of became aware like that a lot of people didn't fully understand the biomechanics behind why they're doing what they're doing and then therefore what they should be doing as a result. And it's probably different for every person, right? Because if the whole point
I
is
I had
like
a bunch of really good drills that work for certain people. I mean, first off, it's all stuff that I did for myself. So I had two seasons where I was not on a roster. Mm-hmm. And so I was throwing with my buddy, Brad Vaughn. He was my high school wideout who was trying to become a firefighter. He was the only guy who could like throw Wednesdays at 9. You know what I mean? And so I was making shit up and then this works, that works. And then training kids, they bring receivers and then running Elite 11 regionals, which is not my drills. It's, you know, the staff's drills. But anyways, I about 5 years ago, people started asking me why and how and what, and I just didn't have great answers because I was talking about their low back, right? Or their like left leg. And I just started kind of calling BS on myself. And I hated school. I'm not good at school. And I was just a bad student. I'm a bad test taker. I'm a bad, you know? And so that wasn't the route for me to go get my master's. And, you know, I've shared this with you, but I have a past life here. I built two companies and sold both of them. And so both of them to over 150 employees with no funding. And so we started Kalo Wedding Rings, Silicone Wedding Ring. We created that category. We sold to a private equity firm 7 years ago. And then we spun off and started Common Thread Collective, which today has 220 employees. It's a digital marketing agency. My high school whiteout, my other one, not Brad Vaughn, Taylor Holiday. We started that together, both of those companies together. And so with some other awesome partners. And so I had like, that's what I was doing. You know what I mean? I would do like Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Kyle Allen. We did draft training. every day I'd end at 10:30 and go to the office, you know, and work and have nothing to do with football. Like, you know, I'm selling websites.
This was like a side job. That was your day job.
It was literally a side job. And so, it was a passion project. So as I about 3 years ago, this September, it'll be 3 years from when I sold, I left Common Thread Collective, and went all in on football. And so, and I left my company. I sold it back to my partners, went all in on an event business about a month before COVID hit. And so it created an opportunity for me to do two things. One, look inwardly and just call BS on all the stuff I don't actually have a good answer for. And two, I launched an online business that's really cool and has a lot of members.
What online business? What do you mean?
So Summit Digital. So if you go to qbsummit.com,
yes.
Summit Digital, I've got about 100 pieces of content in there. We Zoom every Sunday. I've got kids from almost all 50 states. Couple hundred members. It's a really, really cool business. And we talk a lot of quarterback, but we talk a lot about mental health. We talk a lot about how to treat people. We talk a lot about how to deal with social media. We talk a lot about nutrition, confidence. So, it's more about how most of my members are between like 13 and 19. And so, it's a lot of that, but I also have a lot of special guests on too. So
how do you talk to a high school quarterback differently than you talk to like a Josh Allen or a Joe Burrow or somebody like that, that you're training? Are the messages still the same or is it completely different what you're focusing on?
So I kind of think of this like two categories. So somebody who has the potential to do this for a living, mm-hmm. which now means starting in college, right? Like you can become a professional quarterback and never play
in
the NFL.
That's true. Yeah. Right?
And then somebody who probably doesn't, or it's too early to tell, right? If you tell me, if you're like, Lindsay's like, hey, my nephew is the best 11-year-old you've ever seen. Like, and he's the number one ranked 11-year-old. It's still too early to tell. He's only 11, right?
When is it not too early?
I want to see it on varsity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. I've got a couple kids. I kind of have this term like, oh, this kid's Neo. Like, he's the one.
Like, okay. Matrix. Got it.
Right. Uh-huh. I've got a seventh grader. I'm not going to say that. I've got a seventh grader that I just did a video recording. I'm like, this is how I think this is going to go down. It's personal use. I don't want to put any pressure on him, but I have a seventh grader that I think is out of Florida that I think is the one, but I have no idea. Right. He hasn't mm-hmm. placed, hasn't whatever, hasn't done
the
anything.
The potential is there for now.
Potential is there. So, and the writing's on the wall. I don't care about the physical talent. I care about the mental makeup. So, around high school, right? You can kind of tell. And so, I know that's kind of broad, but sophomore, junior, senior years when you can kind of tell. So, and clearly there's guys who, you know, there's the stories of the guys who had no offers and they became Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen. And then there's a long story of the kids who had 40 offers and never played a snap in college. But I put them in kind of two categories, somebody who has a chance to do this for a living or is currently doing this for a living. And then somebody who's probably not. So how I talk to somebody who's probably not, where like the ceiling might be they get a chance to start their senior year, mm-hmm. right? Then I kind of put them in this category and I go, look, now I'm not going to put a cap on their potential, but the way I would address that group, and that's largely Summit Tour kids. Like I don't get the top high school quarterbacks in the country come to my Summit Tour events. Part of it is because I think they see the video and they see the pictures online. They see 10 and 11 and 12 year olds. And they go, that's not for them. Those guys end up becoming private clients. So that's fine. But for my camps, I base a lot of the languaging around this belief that I think quarterbacks are the most influential young men in our country. And to support that, obviously at the top, you got the fame, you have fame, right? And like in awareness and platform, you got Russell Wilson and Tom Brady, right? So like clearly those people are very influential. But go down to college, it's not like it used to be like CJ Stroud would be the big man on campus at Ohio State. He's way more than big man on campus. Campus, he's way bigger than that, right? Yeah. High school, these kids I was with this week, Elite 11, they're way bigger than big man on campus. Everybody in that region knows who they are, right? I had a workout with Arch Manning last week in Thibodaux, Louisiana. He's not big man on campus.
No, he's like household name.
He's national news.
I know.
Okay. Oh, but take Dylan Mills competing to be the starter his junior year at San Clemente High School. with no offers, right? He is big man on campus, right? And so when you take the aggregate of these kids, and Dylan may play, you know, he's probably going to get a scholarship, maybe not. But right now he doesn't have any. So he's the big man on campus. And so that on down, I just say, hey, look, quarterback, we're different. We are not athletes. If you're going to be a quarterback, you're not an athlete. You're not a football player. We don't use that type of language. You're a quarterback. That means you are different. And you need to be a quarterback in every single phase of your life. And when you sign up to play quarterback, you sign up for all of them, right? You sign up for the ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, getting screwed over. This wasn't my fault. I can't believe they're saying this about me. You signed up for it. You better not bitch about it, right? And you also sign up for all the love and all the admiration. You know what I mean? You throw three screens and they go to the house and all of a sudden you threw three touchdowns, right? You sign up for all of it, right? And I tell parents, playing quarterback at a young age gets you access to get you more access to high quality life reps than any of the boys their age. So a high school, let's say you get a chance to start as on varsity in a crappy high school program in the middle of nowhere, and you're not going to play after high school. You are still getting more life reps than the shortstop, the outside hitter, the whatever the main guy in lacrosse is, I don't know that sport, like all of them. You know what I'm saying? And so for the ones who are trying to do this but probably won't do anything with it, well, hold on. You can do a lot with this. You can learn how to become a better man. You can learn how to lead people. You can learn how to deal with responsibility. And so you better take advantage of that and not just complain that you don't have any offers. And then if you're on the other side of it and you really want to do this for a living, I can show you how to do that. I can at least, worst case scenario, expose you to what it's probably going to take.
It's funny. Now I'm in the midst of like the youth sports stuff for my son and seeing some of the gross sides of that, you know, up close and personal, also some good parts too. But like, as a cliche, everybody knows that sometimes the parents make too much of it at too young of an age. As somebody who works with, you know, professional athletes and has been around sports at that level, it's kind of funny to watch people, you know, getting like really, really aggro on an 8-year-old. But I do think that it's funny, like baseball is a sport of failure. So it strikes me, you know, 50,000 foot view is like, these are great opportunities to teach these kids when they do fail, like, you know, to not punish them, but to be like, that's the mental strength. That's like, you got to be able to flush that bad play that just happened and turn around. There's so many lessons that can get wrapped up in it that are more important for the long term than whether or not you got the hit or you made the play or anything like that. Is there anything that you see when you're looking at like high school coaches, or now that you're looking at football from a 50,000 foot view, you know, with clients like Josh Allen and Joe Burrow, who are playing in like Super Bowls and AFC championship games. Well, almost, Josh, sad. Anyway, that you see like high school coaches or coaches that are developing these guys at those younger stages. And it doesn't have to be the things that I mentioned, but are there things that you see them doing that you're like, that's just not the right way to go about it?
Yeah, I think I definitely see mechanical things I disagree with, but that's just never going to change, right? I mean, there's just too many opinions.
What do you mean? Why not?
Well, I'm looking to change it. I'm building a certification program right now, and it's not based off what I think you should do. It's based off of human body movement and positions right. We can't get ourselves in to be able to create leverage. And so that's what I'm building. And will it be 100% sell-through? I doubt it. But I know it's not going to be completely bought into at higher ranks with older coaches who have been set in their ways for a long time. And so that's why I say, no, that will always be the case. There will always be people who would prefer to do it the way that they've convinced themselves is right or that they believe is right. And that's fine. And so like, it's funny, like I get a high school kid will complain about what the coach is telling him to do and how different it is. But I get that in college and I get that in the NFL too.
From how different it is from what you're telling them to do?
Yeah. And especially when it's something that I'm going, here's from a physiological standpoint, why this is the best way to do it. But they just disagree.
How do you handle that?
So I have to train a player to be able to, I gotta be careful here. So I have a lot of examples. So when somebody's asking somebody to do something, so there's an example, because this is a common one, right? I want you to get away from center as fast as you possibly can, turn and run, right? Well, I think about it more in terms of like, the goal should be to get back there and be on balance. Let's just oversimplify it. Like, I want to get back there and be on balance to be able to throw. quick as possible. So I can do that by turning and running and then create work at the end to have to slow myself down, stop myself and get balanced. Or I can do it more efficiently throughout. And actually, I bet you I get the ball out sooner, but I'm also balanced and stuff, or balanced at the top of it. And so when I have a player and it says the coach wants me to do it that way, then what I'll do is go, okay, so the coach is really set on you doing this at the beginning. And I may completely be able to back it up and support that that's wrong, but your coach is asking you to do it. So why don't you do that? And let me look at the top of your drop, the end of your drop. And let's make sure that these two things happen so that you can actually decelerate and actually get that foot in the ground the right way to where I can transfer my energy better. So it's more like, what's the coach asking you to do? What's wrong about that? Great. How do we allow you to be coachable and do it the way that he's asking? But how can you own this at the end so that you are in the position you want to be at the end? And so I don't know if that makes sense or not. It does to me, but like,
it's just so complicated for the athlete, like to be caught, you know, between these two different messages.
Yeah. It is, but it's like, these guys are making a lot of money, so you figure it out. I think like one of the most important traits in a quarterback is figure it outiveness. I mean, we made the word up, but like,
it's a good one.
Figure it out, you know, whether that's third down with the ball in your hand or that's, you can vehemently disagree with what your coach is asking you to do. And the irony too, is that in some of these cases, the quarterback's making $30+ million a year and the quarterback's coach is making $400,000. And I always say, who works for who? Right. But you know, there's something to being coachable and there's something to being able to take in information and I'm in a diverse set of philosophies. You play the game long enough, you're going to hear a bunch of different people's opinion on how to do it. And so that's why one of the incentives to getting awesome at it and becoming a franchise quarterback is now you can start to go, actually, this is what's best for me. Now it can happen in recruiting too, right? I'm going to come to your school and here's how I actually want to do it. So
do you find that you have to arm them with the language to justify, like, so that they can explain what they're doing and why they're doing it so that they can use the right phrasing to convince?
Yeah, it's pretty case by case basis, right? I mean, I try and arm guys with an understanding of it anyways. I mean, we're going to, however you use this information, here's what your obliques are. Here's where they attach. Here's what the functionality of them are. Here's what the responsibility is in the body. So either way, I'm trying to equip guys. I'm telling every high school kid when you get to college, take an anatomy class. I'm pushing all my college guys to take anatomy classes, strengthen your language. Again, I want to get like a friend of mine, Dave Phillips. He's one of those swing coaches in golf. Who's the guy. And like John Rahm is one of his clients right now, who's one of the top ranked golfers in the world. I was like, I need to get a video of just them talking, just to show some of these NFL quarterback coaches.
Yes.
What their conversation looks like. You know, so I'm getting full extension, my serratus. I just feel like it's, you know, I have an impingement on the back. Like, I just want to hear them. I just want like them to hear them talk. Cause it sounds like two chiropractors.
This is how you're talking to your quarterback, right? That's how? Yeah. No.
And we're saying like, you know, really lean into it. Right. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Let me ask you this, because this actually came up in the baseball world last week, right? There was a little bit of a story about somebody who talked about going to work with their private coach in season. And there's some, you know, some people that were like, this doesn't look good for the organization, that he's going outside the organization to talk to private coaches. And then that whole thing. And how much do you find, like, do you reach out to coaches that are in a position and try and create a relationship there? Do coaches sometimes reach out to you so that you can make sure that you're on the same page? I mean, you're working with some pretty high profile people that the franchises are very heavily invested in, and they have to know that this person's working with you in the off season. It seems fairly obvious to me that it would be in their best interest to kind of get on the same page and maybe take some of what you're taking and implement it in their practices. With the quarterback too.
We're in a transitional period right now where
as an industry
where it's part of the reason I want to come up with a certification, because the more people that pop up with opinions and then train a famous guy, and then now they're experts or gurus or whisperers, the worse it makes the people who do understand what they're talking about look, because you can generalize all of them as, oh, the guru guy. Right. I think three people minimum are going to train a quarterback throughout 12 months. The quarterback coach on the team that they play for, high school, college, or pro, their part-time opinion, people like me.
Okay.
Now, I said minimum of three, because on an NFL team, you might, the quarterback coach might coach the quarterbacks. The OC might weigh in on things. There might be an assistant guy in the room, right? They may bring in Josh McCown for OTAs to weigh in, right? So that's minimum the team you play on, one. Two, part-time opinion. Again, minimum of one. Some people throw with multiple guys, right? And then the player himself. He's still going to skip an out route out there and then go, ooh, let me aim higher or let me do this, okay? So I just say, if all three of those aren't on the same page, you just cap that player's development. Mixed messaging is the enemy of development, in my opinion. And so we're in a transitional period right now where there's no respect for the private quarterback coaching industry. So there's no reason to talk to them or inquire of them, right? And then there's a couple of us out there where they do want the opinion, or they just want to appease their quarterback, right? By looping it in. And then there's a couple of examples where it's like, no, I actually talk to them all the time, right? When you see the growth of Josh Allen through 3 years, and then you go, okay, what was he doing? Well, the jump happened after COVID. He was out here for 7.5 months, right? No one was in Buffalo, right? Now, I'm going to make the argument that the growth happened with the staff, with Ken Dorsey. I'm going to make the argument that happened there, and it happened because Josh Allen is a person who never stops thinking about his mechanics and is always trying to find it. So on the Bills, Jordan Palmer, Josh Allen thing, like even though he's out here, like I'll make the argument that it was what he was doing with Buffalo, and it was what he was doing when he's walking around his house thinking about stuff and playing with it and asking people questions. So, but either way, there's a minimum of three people. Now, in that case, all three of us said the same things. There was uniformity. There was some synchronization.
Was that coincidental, or was that because they were open to talking to you?
And open to talking. Sure, you were on the same page. Josh is just an amazing communicator, and he's just so self-sufficient. You know what I mean? Like, nobody reminded him to do anything. Like, he's constantly thinking about it. And so, and I've got a couple other cases where, like, no, I work with them. I've got some guys that are starters in this league, and like all the communication goes through the player, and he's going to traffic those conversations, right? And then I've got times where I'm talking to the quarterback coach on a very consistent basis, weekly, when they're a client. So it just varies across the board. But a transitional period is, you're going to see, I think, more teams connecting to that person that they're with in the offseason. It's happening right now. There's a couple of folks in my industry who are going to they're doing the workouts at the team facility, and the team's starting to pay for it. And I just look at this and I go, this whole thing is about the quarterback. And when the new CBA, or not new CBA, when the new TV contracts hit, I mean, these guys are going to be making 70 a year, like not that far from now.
Mm-hmm.
College kids are making 9, oh, whatever God. The numbers are. You know what I mean? Yep. Mm-hmm. So my thing is, like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. Well, it does feel like, too, you have a generation of people that know more than they've ever known. Like, it, just sitting there listening to the types of things that you're going over with Desmond Ridder on the day that I was there watching, I thought how much of this would potentially go over the head of somebody who just wasn't willing to really dive into understanding all of the stuff. Like, you guys,
I think
are talking
a lot
about
of people, a lot of quarterback coaches in the NFL, and a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL on rosters would not follow Desmond and Mike and I's conversation.
Why do you think Desmond does follow that? Do you think that has to do with mental aptitude? Does that have to do with just a willingness to want to learn and ask the right questions? Like, it strikes me that at a certain point, that maybe the physicality and the athletic skill and the stuff physically that someone has, that might plateau. And then the separator becomes that type of thing, like the willingness to take in new information. And then maybe also to take that information and make their body do the thing, right? Like, that's a skill in and of itself. But what is it that, like, in Desmond's case, do you think makes him able to have that conversation?
So this is our third year together. So that just overall, just for context, for the relationships, this is our third year together. But yeah, it's a combination of those things. Yeah. Of course it's mental aptitude, right? I don't have to explain. It doesn't take me 15 minutes to explain him a simple concept, right? He picks it up right away. His study habits, his preparation. I'm not just sitting here. The draft's over. So I'm not sitting here telling everybody how awesome he is. Like, everyone's going to see. I have no problem making strong statements about Desmond Ridder and his future. But his mental aptitude, his attention to detail, he's really, really interested in doing things correctly based off what he agrees is correct. So he requires a lot of logic behind it, because he's going to sit here and go, well, why is that? Right. So you have to make sense, not for him to understand it, but because for him to believe you, because he's one of these Burrow. A lot of these guys, it's like, no, you can't just throw BS at them. They're going to see right through it. They're too smart and they have really logical, really, really intelligent questions to ask. And so it's his buy-in, it's his work ethic, and everybody works hard. I hate using the term work ethic with quarterbacks, because that should be a prerequisite.
Right.
But there are levels. There are levels of buy-in. Tom Brady operates at a different level of buy-in than a lot of other very successful quarterbacks. Leave it at that. But Desmond has that type of buy-in, especially for a young man. The athleticism, that's the part that can be capped, right? Like the actual like output of a muscle group that can essentially be capped, right? Like certain people's biceps are just not going to get any bigger, but it's now, but how connected you are and how efficient your movements become. I don't know that I see a cap on that, because I think Brady's playing his most connected football.
Yes.
Right.
It's funny because if efficiency was a phrase that you guys talked about a lot, things that you were pointing out to me is like, look how efficient he is in the pocket. Burrow was a specific, piece of tape that you pointed to. Like there's not one inefficient movement that he makes here on this drop back or this, on this play. And it reminded me of all the talk about Brady, right? People talk about everybody else and their footwork. And what they're usually talking about is this like crazy athleticism and stuff like that. But people have said forever that Brady has the most efficient footwork in the pocket. Like he just sort of glides around and everything, nothing's a wasted movement.
And most people will say that, look how efficient he is. And then, so what's so efficient? He's not running around all like it's, that's just, Like that's where like the understanding of the word efficient ends from definitely people in TV, but honestly coaches too. Right. Yeah. Why is that efficient? Well, because he doesn't have a lot of wasted movement. Okay. So how is he being so efficient? They go, well, he's not really stepping unnecessarily, which is the same way of like a different way of saying the same thing. And like, so, okay. Why isn't he stepping unnecessarily? Well, because he's really balanced. Okay. So that's the same thing said differently. Okay. But then like, that's where it ends. Right. But it's not like what I'm looking at is like, how is he applying force to the ground and creating leverage? So the angle of his foot, how far outside of his hip his foot is, that's why that's efficient, is because he's able to create ground force. But to create a position to be able to create leverage to now move his hips over here, that's why his feet go with him there, right? So again, if we're like looking at a piece of tape, it's easier, but it's just like that. The conversation stops at describing somebody as efficient. But everyone has different definitions of what actually allows for that to happen. And that's kind of what I've been in a cave working on for the last probably 9 months.
Do you work on different things with different quarterbacks when they come in? Like one of the things that you, when you were watching tape with Desmond, you watched the same 5 dropbacks from the day before for like 40 minutes talking about, one specific foot and where it was planting and all of the biomechanical reasons that you were talking about that, of course, go over my head. Is it the same type of thing you're looking for in every quarterback? Or when they come in, are you like, I'm seeing something there and we're going to work on that specific thing over and over again?
Yeah, it's case by case basis. So I like to say like, I'm a holistic doctor. I don't like to say I'm a holistic doctor. I like to look at it as a holistic doctor, a family physician, right? Where like we can at least can sit here and evaluate any of these things and let's give you a diagnosis and let's give you a prescription and address that specific need. And by the way, if you have a need that's outside of my understanding or ability to impact you, which happens all the time, got a pretty good network of people I ought to connect you with to go work on that, right? But no, it's case by case. So with Desmond, I call him areas of attention. It doesn't suck. You're not broken, right? But like, here's an area that needs attention. So we go through a process. And if it's on the physical side of things, I want to get the buy-in and that we both agree this is an issue. Okay. Or an area of attention. Okay? Then we go through a process. It's 4 steps. So one, is I need to learn the pattern, the new pattern, and execute it correctly. So, you know, with Desmond, it was a specific drop. I'll leave it, you know, leave that at that. So it was a drop to throwing a certain ball to a certain part of the field, which is usually with all quarterbacks, it's a version of that. And so one, we got to learn the pattern and execute it correctly. And that's right there where a lot of people in the industry go wrong. They just work on it full speed, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say it's an out route to the left. Let's just get a ton of out routes to the left.
Run 50 of those.
Tons mm-hmm. of them. You know what I mean?
Without addressing the part of it that might be
which
the
is creating more patterns of that core movement.
Right.
Strengthening your bad habit or helping you get better at sucking is another way I say it. So, so we got to learn the pattern and execute it correctly. That is slow and boring. That is not even half speed. That is walking and boring. Okay. Then we can add resistance to strengthen the movement. Then we can add speed or you know, pick up the pace or the tempo. Right. And then fourth, prepare for competition, whether that's routes on air, whether that's 7-on-7, whether that's actual competition. So you got to go through that process. And what most people do, and in college and pro, going back to our original conversation, they don't have time to sit for 45 minutes and watch the same drop over and over again. They have a 20-hour rule in college. And in the NFL, they have their CBA's version of a 20-hour rule. I'm sure they would love to do that if they could. It's illegal. They can't. And so that's why, like the private quarterback coach, there's got to be a threshold of, can they actually explain how to get this player better? And then can that system plug into, like, is that compatible with what they're doing at that school or that team? And so that's where I go, if it's grounded in like logic and human body movement, then I should be able to plug that into your team or your school, or you're the problem.
How much of a change can you make in a short period of time by isolating something like that?
You can make a significant change in that thing that you're isolating.
Okay.
And depending on what that thing is, can have, like, if we're just working on starting and gun. So let's say somebody starts and gun and they're leaning over their right side and all their weight's on their front foot. And the first thing they do is lean back with their upper body. And that is an overwhelming majority of quarterbacks. Okay. By addressing that, starting from a place of stability, an efficient first movement and maintaining stability through the drop. Like that would be one thing that I work on with a guy. I've got a couple of very prominent high school and college guys next week. Like, poof, that's it right there. We're going to fix your gun drop. They're like, what? You know, like, is it going to be a lot of throws? I have practice. Like, it might be zero throws, bro, but we're going to change something on you that's going to have a cascading effect. Now, if I work on play action from under center to the left, throwing a bang eight, like, well, that's not going to help everything. That's going to help that, right? So how helpful is it? I don't know how often you call that play, right? So it depends case by case basis on how big the effect can be. But taking a player who's used to bouncing and playing on their toes and getting them connected to the ground, it's made a big difference in Josh Allen and Joe Burrow's career.
Do you guys have like a throws limit like baseball does? You know, where they're very, very careful about protecting a pitcher's arm. Do you guys, is that something that is on quarterbacks' radars or should be?
If you have to protect a player from overthrowing because they don't have the self-control to say my arm's starting to bug me or my arm's getting tired, I just want to get the work. I just usually don't work with, you know, that doesn't come up a ton. And we're also looking at the scope of work for the week. I don't have a pitch count. I got a pretty good feel for what's 100 and what's 150. So, I think if it was the other thing about pitchers is they're usually throwing max velocity or really close to it. And that's just not the case with quarterbacks. And the most common throws in football is the layer throw, firm with an arc. But guys in the NFL throw the ball as hard as they can, like a couple times a game. So pitch count's not as relevant. It's not a bad question. I mean, it definitely comes up and I've definitely been asked it a lot. But with baseball, it's just, that's the thing about baseball. They're so far ahead. I mean, there's a camera measuring the angle of their wrist, like elbow and wrist association on the pitch. And when it drops below this degree, there's a guy in a booth managing that in a baseball game. And when the elbow drops to here, the increase for injury goes through the roof. Like, you don't have that in football.
Is that where we're headed in football?
Not
Should
to
we be
level,
headed there?
100%. What other position matters? Right? Like, what other position matters? So you can there's just, you can just have that piece figured out and get a job. Everyone in the building can get job extensions. And so, like, yeah, we're heading as much information as fast as possible. And if people are unwilling to incorporate new data and new technology and open their mind to learning, there's a ton of them that are pointless and the company's not going to fail and all that. Like, but if we have a bunch of people who aren't curious and open-minded about this, like, those are the, get them out and give one of these young people a job. That's what you're seeing at the quarterback position. I mean, Zach Robinson, quarterback coach, Los Angeles Rams. Like, Mike Kafka, heading into year four, right? I already mentioned Kellen Moore, left and right. These guys are becoming, and some of these older quarterback coaches in the NFL and college, they're concerned, for sure. It's happening. But it's not just because, like, they're sexy young coach and the name. That doesn't matter when you're hiring a quarterback coach in the NFL, right? It's a marketing thing. And it's not for just because they're cheaper. The difference between 300 grand and 260 grand, you know, to be doing an NFL owner, that doesn't matter, right? Or 500 grand and 250 grand, that doesn't matter to an NFL owner, right? No, it's, I think it's the open mind, it's being open minded, or you just got done playing and you're working with some of these technologies and you're understanding how that works. Well, cool, bring that into this room. So we're seeing this thing flip here. This position coach is getting younger and younger at the college and NFL level.
This feels counterintuitive listening to you talk. This might be a stupid question, but Joe Burrow coming off the knee injury, in the long run, might that have been a good thing to happen to him because it forced him to kind of like retrain his body as a quarterback with some of the things that you're talking about here? Now that you're so familiar with different biomechanical things, when you work with him in the off season, and you're trying kind of taking like certain parts of the body out of it or like working it back in to a degree, do you think that ended up making him a better quarterback?
I just think anytime I would say there are elements, this is true for anybody who's coming off of an injury or had something terrible happen to them in their life and then they learned from it. The silver lining essentially is kind of the theme here. I think there's a ton of positives that came from that experience. And then there's just a bunch of negatives too. So I don't know that I'd be on the side where I say it was a good thing. But I don't also don't know the personal pain and all the things that went through it. Right.
But just purely from a quarterbacking standpoint, did he come out of it as a better quarterback?
That are going to positively impact his career and have already. When you rehab a knee, I saw this with Adrian Peterson. Okay. I think he rushed for 2000 yards after his ACL. Is that right?
Right?
He had a crazy year after he tore his ACL.
Yep.
And I'm like, how is that possible? Right. Well, when you rehab your knee, you don't just ice and stem your knee. I mean, your quads, your glutes, your obliques, your adductors, all these muscle groups that support that knee. If you rehab your knee correctly with a world-class team and nutrition and all the things, like when you're in a hurry to get back, and that might be the best you've ever eaten. That might be the most you've ever paid attention to sleep. That might be the least amount of alcohol you've ever drank in that period of time. That might be not the, maybe it's the hardest you've ever worked. Maybe it's not, but what it is it's an opportunity to develop and change your perspective on working on my game. You're working to get back by a deadline to be able to play at a certain level and all the things that, you know, these guys are self-starters, right? Adrian Peterson doesn't need convincing to work hard, neither does Joe Burrow. But how could Adrian Peterson come back and be better and faster and all that? Because maybe he addressed his body in a way he never had in the past. And with Joe, my brother did it twice, like ACL twice. Like, you address the attention you pay to your body. It sucks. It's super hard. It's super painful. Like, no trips, no fun stuff. Like, you know what I mean? The sacrifice is just over the top. But yeah, I think there's a case to be made that the silver lining that can come out of that is a different approach to your off season, to your body, and a different set of muscles and the sequencing of your body that can make a major impact. And in Joe's case, he throws the ball harder post knee surgery than he does before knee surgery. And it's not because the surgery or the ACL that they put in there. It's a byproduct of a lot that came out of that off season.
Like what? How does he come out of that throwing harder?
His lower half, I think, is stronger. It's more connected. He was forced to, rehabilitate, but also you know, strengthen his body in a way that, you know, he hadn't before. He was at Ohio State trying to become the backup and then trying to become the starter and then transferred and trying to have a good junior year and then trying to figure out how they're going to be senior year. And then poof, get ready for the NFL draft. And then COVID hits. He met his team on Zoom. He never even met anybody on his team until training camp. That was his rookie year, right? That's peak COVID. Then he come out and then he tears his ACL. And everyone's talking about Justin Herbert's rookie year where we were talking about it then. Joe was on pace. Joe had better numbers at that point when he got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Joe was on pace to have one of the most historic, maybe the best rookie year ever.
Right.
Right. Statistically speaking. So, like, you know, so it's just, it's not like he's like in year six and he's had a bunch of the same off seasons. Every single off season he's had since he left high school has been different and unique. So the one where he rehabbed his knee was different and unique to the development and the connection that he built in his body. This offseason, I think, is the offseason where he has the biggest opportunity to make a jump. And boy, is that scary.
You don't have to tell us, but are there specific areas that you could, you know, watch his tape and say, like, these are the areas in which you jump? Or is it just now you have a full offseason and you're healthy and you're implementing all of these things and you're just going to be better in general?
Yeah, it's better. It's more generalization of it, right? If he was like really bad at throwing out routes to the left, but he wasn't, you know what I mean? If it was this, it was that. So I think it's going to be, he's going to become a more efficient mover and he's already become very efficient. And specific throws, he just played his first full season, you know? So there's a lot of little things. He lands in a couple of days. So I'll dive into what has transpired this offseason here next week.
Last question. I think a lot of us are quick to judge on the outside and clearly don't know exactly what we're judging. We're just judging, you know, the production, whether or not the numbers are there, the success is there. Is there a certain point where you think it should click by, or is it always a work in progress and there's room for growth, you know, or I guess the answer could be it's different for everybody.
For a player?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a point when they don't when have a bunch of things to work on?
Or you just go, I know who this player is. Like, this is, you know, after X number of years in the league, perhaps, like, this is, you know, probably what we're going to continue to get is what we're getting right now.
Yeah, for sure. But I think you get to a point, I always say this, like, quarterbacks are in their developmental phase. It starts when they're little. I think it ends around when they get their second contract. It doesn't end in the NFL. It doesn't end once they get a scholarship. I mean, the developmental phase that a quarterback's in when they're redshirting, right? The things that you can develop at that time. I always tell quarterbacks, if you're going to redshirt and you're a big time recruit and you've been the guy and all that stuff, like, be the franchise starting quarterback of whoever else is redshirting. Like, get your own lift in, get your own film sessions in. Like, you guys go to sushi on Wednesdays. You know what I mean? Like, so there's a thing that you can develop on aside from physically, right? But when guys get into like their first, second, like Joe's going into his third year, yeah, there's things, right? So do I think he's going to become a running quarterback? No, but like, there's, you see what he is. Great. Now it's more efficient. Now you start to switch to like, what are things you can do on and off the field to become more durable and to be able to do this longer? And what are some things you can do to, like, maybe let's test your eyes and let's see how your tracking and your vision is and your depth perception is. Let's look at how's your vision, right? What are some things we can do psychologically, right? What are some things from a performance psychologist? So the evolution of the quarterbacks, I think Tom Brady would tell you, you know, and it's not cheesy engineering. You know, you never stop evolving. You never stop working. You never stop finding a thing. He is evolving. Right. I mean, I haven't seen Tom Brady make an unbelievable play in years. His ability to put himself in a position to put the ball in play. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't drop dimes 20 a game. I'm just saying, like, sprint to the right, juke the defensive end and whip 160 across his body. I haven't seen that out of him.
Right.
But his ability to put the ball in play and remain on time and create, like, that's how he's evolved.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So I think they become what they're going to become, but then you switch to longevity. Maybe your vision gets better, strengthening their core, getting them more connected. That's where I see the evolution, not really having an end.
I guess my question was more rooted in like, from a judgment standpoint of when a quarterback has had enough chances that we kind of know what we're looking at, which is sort of negative, I guess, in just general tone. But like there's every year, there's a handful of quarterbacks that you're like, you know, this is the year, like everybody's this year, Jalen Hurts has to have a big year. Everybody knows that. I'm not breaking news, right? Like, or else they've positioned themselves, you know, you have like a Daniel Jones or something like that. You've got quarterbacks every year that maybe you haven't seen it to this point, but there becomes just from a business standpoint, the teams are like, I got to know by now, you know? And I'm wondering how much it's reasonable to expect somebody to continue getting much better.
I got it.
Past a certain point.
I got
point.
The answer or my answer. I want to see them play a full season in a good situation.
100%. Yeah.
I haven't seen Sam Darnold do that yet.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him play in a good situation for a year yet.
Yeah.
Started that way last year, 3-0. And then you build your entire offense around Christian McCaffrey and he's out for the year. And when he got benched, they were on pace to shatter the NFL record for drop passes. I haven't seen him play 10 games in a good situation. Right. I've seen Baker do it, right? In a good situation. I've seen Mitch do it, play in a relatively speaking, a good sit. Now, maybe not, so, right?
Because we might have to go back and what's our definition of good?
Yeah.
But yes.
But I mean, but I would have here's my definition. And like, have they done that yet? Right? I look at the Giants and this year and I go, like, if you ask me how I think Daniel Jones is as a player, I go, I think he should be really good. I haven't seen him in a good situation yet. There's a lot of potential for this to be a good situation this year. I think as high of Brian Daboll as any coach in this league, can Saquon stay healthy? Is that one guy good? Is the kid going to step up? Is that guy, like, there's a chance that that's a good situation. So we'll know more at the end of the year. But if somebody gets a good situation once or twice and they just can't get it done, maybe they need to change the scenery, maybe this, maybe that. But that's kind of the threshold. But to say that this guy, that Sam Darnold is a bust, when you've given him four totally different, for different reasons, bad situations, it's not any one person's fault, mm-hmm. right? But it's not his, right? Then it doesn't matter if like I love Sam or not. I can't come to a conclusion that he's a bad player when you put him in a bad situation. Because I just think that if you put Tom Brady or any of these guys in a terrible situation, Russell Wilson last year, first bad season he's had, he was in a terrible situation. The offensive line, this, that, the other thing. Like, even Russell Wilson can have a bad year. And that guy,
aren't there quarterbacks, though, that overcome some bad situations? Like, your guy Burrow had a not so great offensive line in front of him, but he was the type of quarterback that could kind of overcome that situation. Now, he had other pieces around him that were certainly outstanding, right? But
yeah, but
there are certain quarterbacks.
But like, he had probably the worst offensive line and probably the best receiving core, right? So totally. It's just like, so it's kind of offset. That defense created a ton of turnovers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They played against the AFC North in a year when Lamar Jackson was out the entire time. Pittsburgh's as bad as they're ever going to be. And Cleveland was in shambles. So it's just like, you know what I mean? They got Tennessee, he throws three picks. Like, they capped, they had a great team. He overcame all sorts. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that. I have to defend why I think Joe Burrow is good at football, but I'm just saying, like, that was, I don't think that was a bad situation the same way that I think the Giants was last year for, you know what I mean? Or Carolina or some of these other situations were bad. There was an element of the team that was really, really weak, offset by some elements that were really, really strong. Now, I can't believe they went to the Super Bowl. That was crazy. Right. But the parts of their team that were good were really good.
No, the parts of their team that weren't good should be pretty good too. So he set it into a great situation. Jordan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you letting me hang around and just watch you guys do your work. I thought it was incredibly interesting. And I'm thoroughly fascinated by the ways in which it's different from what we're seeing elsewhere.
Yeah.
For the reasons that you said, like Desmond said at one point when I was there, that a lot of quarterbacks aren't even taught how to do a drop back. You just start dropping back. I find that incredible.
Three and a half. That's just where you're one starting. Big, two little, but not how.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Start from the ground up. So I'm interested to see where this goes for you.
I want to change the way that the entire position is developed by getting back to the roots and making this really, really simple. But if you want to do it this way, you're going to have to learn a little bit about the body. So we'll see how it goes.
So fascinating. And there's lots more from Jordan out there at qbsummit.com. And on social media, he's on Instagram and TikTok with tips and analysis. His handle in both places is Jordan Palmer. You can find me at Lindsay_Rhodes on Twitter. I'm Lindsay Rhodes NFL on Instagram. Always eager to hear your feedback, what you found interesting about today's conversation, what you wish that maybe we had talked about a little bit further. In fact, in that regard, I would love it if you'd leave your feedback on the podcasting platform that you're listening on to, a review, a star rating, a like, a subscribe, all the things that keep the NFL Roadshow going as a part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. Andrew Immer is our producer, always does a great job. Love Andrew. Marissa Rivas is the director of sports podcasts for SiriusXM, and Steve Cohen is the SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting. And big thanks to all of those aforementioned people. Hope that you have a great weekend, everybody, and I also hope that we'll see you back here again next week.
SiriusXM Podcasts.